So a question for you to think about as we listen to what I'm going to share. What do you think when you hear the word worship? What do you think when you hear the word worship? And what do you think others outside of the church think when they hear the word worship? So Paul, in our letter that we read, is writing to the early church in Rome, not long after the death and resurrection of Jesus. The church in Rome will be meeting in people's homes. For them, the church is not a building, it's a movement, a people who have chosen to follow Jesus. Some will be Jews and most will be Roman citizens. And the Jews will have a set way, a pattern of what it is to worship God. It will involve the temple. It will involve offerings. It will involve sacrifices. It will involve a yearly pattern of worship that involves festivals and fasting. And likewise, the citizens of the Roman Empire, the Gentiles, would also have their own patterns of worship when it comes to worshipping their gods and their deities, which will involve shrines and offerings and sacrifices and their yearly pattern of events. So both the Jews and the non-Jews that Paul is writing to in Rome will have their idea of what true and proper worship looks like. And then they receive this letter from Paul, in which the first 11 chapters he explores all that God has done to rescue the world. And then he lands this bombshell, which we've just heard, which I will repeat. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. And then this bit I've written in bold and underlined. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is. His good, pleasing and perfect will. That's as it appears in the NIV translation of the Bible. The Message, which is not really a translation but an interpretation of sorts, that uses contemporary language, puts the same reading like this. So here's what I want you to do. God helping you, that is. Take your everyday, ordinary life. You're sleeping, you're eating, you're going to work, you're walking around life. And place it before God as worship. And that's the bit that I put in bold and underlined. And place it before God as worship. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you, and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to the level of its immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. Paul's message to the Jews and the non-Jews in Rome, and to us today, is that worship is so much more than what we think it is. Worship involves every aspect of our lives, which is summed up by Paul with the phrase, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. Worship is what we do throughout the week, throughout the days, involves everything, including what we do with our bodies. And just as our bodies are not perfect, and this is good news, and just as our bodies are not perfect, at least mine isn't, neither are our lives not perfect. And yet Paul says, it is our imperfect, ordinary lives that we bring to God as worship. We don't have to come to God perfect to worship him. We have to come to God as we are to worship him. Now this talk is the first of five talks that are being given on a series over the next few months. And you'll see from, if you look at the term card, that they're not sort of going to be following in the next 4 weeks because of different things that are happening during this coming term. So they'll be spread out over the next couple of months. So this is worship number one, and there'll be 2, 3, 4, and 5. And this is an introductory one. And the series is actually called Whole Life Worship. And as I said, this is a bit of an introduction. So I'm going to spend the rest of this talk, which is very, very short, by answering the question, what is worship? It's easy to focus on the externals of what worship looks like. But what is important is that worship comes from within. So number one, worship is a response to God's love. Paul, as I've said, spends the first 11 chapters of his letter to the church in Rome exploring what God has done for us. Because once we see that God is the source of all life, and we see and understand how much he has done to secure and win our salvation, there is so much that we can thank him for. In Romans 1:22, we read that one of the marks of a world in which God doesn't matter is a world that no longer gives thanks. Our worship focuses our thankful hearts on God and all that he has done for each one of us and the love that he has for each one of us. Number two, worship involves our everyday ordinary life, our sleeping, our eating, our going out to work, and the walking around of our life. Worship is not just an inward, private, spiritual activity. It is that, but it's not just that. It involves every ordinary aspect of our lives. So it has to be seen as more than the hour, or when you come to St. James, it's normally an hour and 15 minutes, isn't it? They get longer at 11 o'clock. I don't know if that's a good thing. It's more than just an hour on a Sunday. Our worship should have no sacred and secular divide. There shouldn't be bits of our life that are worshipful and bits of our life that aren't. Everything is worship. Everything is spiritual. We are called to worship God in our homes, our streets, and in our workplaces. That's hard. To worship God in our homes. I don't know about you, but I've got two teenage boys and a little girl who's 11 who thinks she's slightly older. And I'm called to worship in that space and in that place. That's much harder than worshipping in front of you lot, where I'm trying my best to look my best. We are called to worship God in our homes, our streets, and in our workplaces. And we worship through our attitudes, through our finances, through our politics, our leisure. All these things and more can be done in God's presence or not in God's presence. We can do these things in God's way or not in God's way. And we can do these things for God's glory or not for God's glory. Number three, final one. Worship is a decision to be shaped in a particular way. I think this is the most important one. Worship is a decision to be shaped in a particular way. Paul links our worship with changing the way that we think. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The culture in Rome would have had a way of doing things and thinking about things, just as our culture has a way of doing things and thinking about things. How we think about stuff and how we do things is impacted upon by the culture that we live in. As a result, cultural influences our priorities, our culture influences what we prioritise, our desires, and influences what we think a good life looks like, what we think success looks like. This is played out in many ways throughout the day, and it's mostly played out uncritically, unthinkingly. So let me give you an example. Guess what it's about? Yes. I've been part of two cycle clubs, and in both, we cyclists routinely upgrade our bikes. We increase the number of bikes that we have in our collection. Well, you need to. You need different bikes for different weather conditions and for different terrains, obviously. We buy the latest bits to add to our bikes, and we annually replace the clothing with the latest cycling fashion clothing. We also only drink coffee, and you have to know your coffee. You need to be quite on top of what good coffee is, and you need to know where the good cafes are on a cycle route. Now, none of this, in both of the cycle clubs I've been part of, has ever been articulated. It's never been spoken out. There are no rules that you need a winter bike, a summer bike, a training bike, and an off-road bike, or that you need to replace your bike every other year. But that's the norm, that's the culture. And frankly, it is great to look at what new bits of kit other people have got at the beginning of a cycle season. And you'd feel a bit out of place if you didn't at least adhere to some of the cycle cultural norms of the club. So the club culture influences how its members prioritise how it spends its money, how we spend our money. Sometimes to the frustration of our partners. In fact, there are two formulas that are used by cyclists. There's a formula that determines what's the minimum number of bikes you have, and then a formula that determines what's the maximum number of bikes you have. The formula that determines the minimum number of bikes you have is N-1, N being the current number of bikes that you have. So the ideal number of bikes that you have is N+1, and N being... And then there's the maximum number you have is D-1, okay? And D-1 is where the number of bikes that you have, if you had more, you know, so D, is that would lead to your partner divorcing you. Okay, so somewhere between the two, N+1 and D-1 is the ideal number of bikes to have. So the culture that we live in shapes us. Both our wider national culture, the culture that's prevalent in the West, and the culture of the subgroups that we may be part of, like my cycling club. It influences what we desire, what we prioritise, how we use our leisure time, what we aspire to, the people that we admire, our values, how we spend our money, how we live our lives. But worship is a desire, is a decision to be shaped in a different way. As followers of Jesus, we no longer conform to the culture around us unthinkingly, because we see things through the perspective of knowing God's love and seeking first his kingdom, prioritizing God's will in our lives. And that change in perspective shapes and changes us. And worship should shape and change us. As we respond to God's love, as we see the world differently, we discover ever more deeply what God's will is for our lives in the ordinary places that we find ourselves. And our worship should noticeably influence how we live our lives, sometimes against the flow of cultural norms. I haven't replaced my bike or added to its number for at least 5 years, though that may be because I'm at the D-1 limit. This hour on a Sunday is the tip of an iceberg that is made up of 168 hours per week. Our worship should involve our whole lives. So before I end, I'm going to ask you, each one of you, to think of one aspect of your life that this week you will give back to God as worship. So just as a prompt, as I've had time to think about this a bit longer than I'm going to give you, I will share a few examples, and then I'll leave about 30 seconds before we move on. You may want to offer, as an act of worship, your response and attitude towards a person that you struggle to get along with. You may want to offer, as an act of worship, your internet usage. You may want to offer, as an act of worship, reviewing your financial situation and how and where you spend and give your money. You may want to offer, as an act of worship, a meal with somebody new to this church, or someone new to a group that you're part of, or someone new to your neighbourhood. You may want to offer, as an act of worship, a letter or an email to someone you know who could do with some encouragement.